everyone, and welcome back to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I'm IndyStar Colts insider Jim Aiello, and I am joined, as always, by fellow insider and co-host Joel A. Erickson. Joel, first of all, happy Veterans Day to you and any veterans you may know. And yeah,
I know a few. I would also say happy Veterans Day. Pretty important day. Greg, our colleague Greg Doyle, has an interesting story for Veterans Day readers. So just a shout out to Greg there.
Oh, good. I haven't checked it out yet. I'll read it after we record. That'll be my assigned reading for the day. Yeah, it's a big week. It's weird. It's a short week. I don't know how to it's kind of an adjustment. I wanted to ask you about this. It's like, I was watching Ravens tape yesterday and I was like, well, I don't know how relevant this is. Like, we gotta move right into the Titans, like, immediately, you know? It's kind of strange. I feel like the Colts maybe feel the same way. It's like they didn't get really a chance to linger on Baltimore at all. And which I guess is good in some ways, because they're really, really, really different teams.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. This is a very, in some ways, I think Tennessee's offense is maybe a little bit of a worse matchup for the Colts, just because it's a better passing game. Yeah. Very different kind of run game, and the sort of run game that, well, all run games now have officially essentially been squashed by the Colts this season. But the Tennessee's passing game is, well, it's kind of the same in that it's pretty much a boom or bust passing game. There's not like a lot of, there's been a lot of games lately where Tannehill's been like around 50 or 60% completions, but he's got touchdowns, you know?
Yeah.
And actually just looking at it, the Titans are first in passing yards per play, but only 21st in yards per game. So it's just a little bit of a different passing game this week, and also just a very different running game. This is more of a traditional running game. You just line up and go get them.
I love that from Justin Houston. We asked about the run game. He was talking about it was kind of a college style thing with the Ravens. And then when I asked about the Titans, he was like, yeah, it's bounce left, bounce right, play action. It's like, okay, that's the Titans offense. Like, I actually kind of, you got to respect the Titans for that. It's like everyone knows what they're going to do and they just do it anyway. Like, ever since Tannehill got like put into the lineup last year, it was like, yeah, we're going to run a lot of Derrick Henry and a lot of play action and chuck it deep to AJ Brown. So stop it if you can. And most teams have it.
Yeah. That's pretty much, the Bears had a really good, like,
yeah,
I feel bad for the Bears because I felt like they had a pretty good week last week against it.
You wrote the column that you wrote about the Colts after the game against the Ravens can be written about the Bears every single week.
That the Bears defense deserved better.
Yes. Every single week you could write that column in Chicago.
Yeah, it's, I mean, they held Tannehill to 158 passing yards.
47% completion.
And sacked him three times, which is more than anybody sacked him so far this season. I don't think Henry had a big game either, right?
No, he didn't. He had 60. No, maybe I'm wrong. Hold on, let me look. But
I think he had 68 yards.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was going to say 68, but I wasn't positive. So, yeah, there you go.
On 21 carries, which is essentially 4 yards a carry.
And yet, that, I mean,
3.2 yards a carry.
You hold one of the best running back in the AFC. I mean, right now it's Dalvin Cook and Derrick Henry for the NFL, but best running back in the AFC to 68 yards. You hold the quarterback to 47% completion percentage and you lose.
That's
ridiculous.
That was a tough one. That's a real tough one for Chicago.
That's just the life that is being led there every year. So we don't
have 3 yards per carry for the Titans, and Tannehill is at I'm trying to find the yards per pass here, and you hold Tannehill to 7.5 yards per pass, which for them is low, and that's rough. That's a rough day for the defense.
Yeah, I mean, the Colts didn't do that much. I mean, Lamar Jackson was, you know, completed 82% of his passes, and it was for 170 yards or whatever, but they held him to 2.9 yards per carry on 38 carries. And so it was very, like I said, it was a very similar situation where you're like, man, that defense really played a lot better than they deserved any similar scores, by the way. If the Colts just find a way to garbage time to touchdown like the Bears did, it would have been the exact same score, 24-17.
Yeah, no, that's 100% true. And yeah, I mean, but the only that the Bears gave up a few more big plays, but not like a lot.
No. So, yeah, AJ Brown, and that's actually it's a good thing to bring up because we're talking about that Titans offense, is that those big plays were just AJ Brown like running slants, and there was one deep pass that he made, that Tannehill just made an incredible throw. Dropped it in a bucket over a great, and it was great coverage. But then another one was just AJ Brown shaking off like three Bears secondary guys because he's like a running back out there.
Yeah, AJ Brown is really, I mean, we're at the point now where Tennessee for some reason never really has like a complete passing, like receiving core. They're just not allowed to for some reason.
Yeah. But
finally actually have at least one receiver who they can count on in AJ Brown. He's been
great. Corey Davis has been okay this year. I think like he's certainly not the guy everybody thought it was going to be when they drafted him, but like he's been a good number two. And then they got Jonnu Smith and Anthony Firkser at tight end are both pretty good. Like they're both, none of them are stars, but like they have some weapons. Like it's kind of weird. It's not the Tennessee offense you'd grow up with, you know. It's, they have some, I don't know, they have some flash to them, I suppose. Than more
Tennessee
than
offense I grew up with was the ball goes to
Eddie George
and Frank Wycheck every time they throw it, literally every time.
Well, I actually gotta say, give a quick shout out to Kevin Dyson, a real legit good NFL player. I like Kevin.
Oh yeah, that's true.
But I don't think a star level receiver. I don't want to besmirch Kevin Dyson here, but I can look up the numbers. Let's see. Wow, he did not last very long in the NFL.
No, he didn't.
It's like 5 years, and his best year was 825 yards. So I feel very comfortable saying he was a fine receiver, but that was about it.
He might have been a little bit less than that, but
yeah, maybe not
on the podcast. They've got five guys. Tennessee's got five guys who have more than 20 catches so far. Jonnu Smith and Brown are the ones with – they've each got six touchdowns.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a big play passing offense, I think, is the most important thing. Which the Colts have been mildly susceptible to this year, despite as good as they are defensively. They've been a little bit susceptible to big play. That's really a nitpick more than anything, but Tennessee definitely more capable of doing it than most of the teams the Colts have played so far.
For sure. I was like, I'm watching, I'm listening. I'm just thinking about every Colts fan that's listening to us talk about AJ Brown and going, Colts could have had him. Colts could have had him in the second round.
I think I can't remember. It's hard to remember like what I wrote about or what I advocated, but I really liked AJ Brown. Whenever he was in the draft, I still think some of those, as long as we're on that, it's really hard to kill the Colts for that, just given the hard luck of Paris Campbell.
The Paris Campbell thing is you can't really compare, since actually AJ Brown was picked about eight spots ahead of him. The one everybody lingers on is DK Metcalf, fine. But I guess what you could say was, well, they didn't have to draft Ben Banigou at 49 and could have taken AJ Brown, who went at 51.
There's
some of that.
I think that's true. Most people go to Campbell and say, you know, they missed on Campbell, but I don't know how they were supposed to know he was going to get injured five times in 2 years.
Yeah. And a lot of it, like, again, I know people don't want to hear this, but a lot of it was kind of weirdly fluky. I don't know. I think it's been bad luck. And you and I talked on the phone the other day. I don't think either one of us is ready to give up on Paris Campbell quite yet. And you and I both think, you know, based on what we saw in week one, this was going to be a big year for Paris Campbell.
Yeah. I think Paris Campbell might have been, I think Paris Campbell might have been the guy who would be like the, not like a true number one, but I think he would have given them more of a number one than they have. I think we saw that the first week. Phillip Rivers very clearly liked him. They can do a lot of different things with him.
Yeah.
I think he was such a good fit, and it's a pretty big deal that they lost him. I think maybe more so than we've realized, because it was only one game and they lost that game. And we didn't have a chance to really fully process what we'd seen from Paris Campbell. I wrote about him that he might have had a breakout game that week, and then he immediately gets hurt. But yeah, I think one of the things we were talking about, just to go through that, just to let the podcast listeners in on that conversation, is that maybe they lost their two best players on offense in the first game, essentially.
Yep. Yeah, because Paris Campbell, as people remember, made it, what, it was the first play of the game, right, against Minnesota?
First or second, one or two.
Yeah, so Marlon Mack, clearly they've been missing him on the running game, and Paris Campbell, like we were just, like Joel was just saying, like, it looked like he was bound to have a huge role in this offense. Like, again, it feels like we're making excuses, but if you just kind of rewind, you're like, okay, back to August of 2019, they lost their franchise quarterback, now their top running back, and now their top receiver. Maybe we shouldn't be expecting too much of the offense.
and we're not saying it doesn't need to be better. Like, there's lots of reasons to be upset at the Colts offense, but you know, in hindsight, maybe those two things were bigger than we thought they would be.
Yeah. And again, like, it's one of those ones. I wonder, you and I have talked about this before. I know we don't have to get too far into Andrew Luck, but like, I just wonder, like, how the wake or the after effect, I guess, of that earthquake of Andrew Luck retiring. Like, how many years does that last? You know, like, we're still in it, you know? And again, it's hard to remember sometimes because it seems like it's been two, you know, a season and a half since it happened. But like, the Colts are still, but this is maybe the beginning of it, honestly, of the after effects of Andrew Luck's retirement. And again, it's one of those things you have to keep in mind, is that they built this team largely with Luck in mind as leading the team, and have adjusted and have had opportunities to adjust. So again, it's not fully an excuse, but like, it really hasn't been that. I mean, it's only been like, what, August, September, October, like 16 months since it happened.
Yeah, it's not very long. it's they've had essentially one off season to deal with it. That's pretty much it. They've essentially had one off season to deal with the loss of Andrew Luck. That's if you've, and Colts fans don't know this because they've had, you know, their quarterback situation set for like 25 years before that. Mm-hmm. But usually it takes a little bit longer than that to fix it. Usually.
It does. I honestly, again, most teams, when you reside, as our columnist wrote recently, when you reside in quarterback hell or on the road to quarterback hell, that trip takes years to get back from a lot of the time for a lot of teams.
Man,
especially,
we're really starting the podcast listeners out on a downer.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Again, I'm looking at my like notes for the podcast and I don't have Andrew Luck typed anywhere. It just kind of came up. It's just one of those things where you kind of, I guess we're kind of doing this midseason review-ish thing. I mean, that's where they're at. Like, and you're just kind of looking back and going, man, like this defense with Andrew Luck, this, like, again, this offense with Andrew Luck, like, you can't help but wonder, you know, what if, I guess, but I guess there's no point in doing that too much. It's just, again, I think it just bears remembering when you're thinking about this team in the, like, the zoomed out, where are they in terms of their contention window?
I think it's good when you look at the way that I don't like when people look at it is when they say, just imagine what this could have been with Andrew Luck. Like, that is not the current Colts leadership's fault in any way, shape, or form.
No,
like, that's Andrew's fault.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's been like presented as, well, you know, they're just missing Andrew Luck, there's nothing they could have done about that. Just nothing.
He wasn't the perfect NFL quarterback by any means, but he's better than, I don't know, all but six or seven in the NFL right now, I would guess, at least the way he played in 2018. Like, again, it's just interesting to like think about this offense with, you know, even say he was too hurt to play last year, even that, like, just imagine what this offense is right now with a healthy Andrew Luck. So, but that's a huge digression.
Okay. I don't have to imagine it though, because he took himself out of the team.
No, I'm not saying, well, it's clearly his fault. His decision. He's the one who decided to do this. I'm just saying, like, okay. So I guess the way to say it is then to fit what you're trying to say is, imagine this team with a caliber of quarterback of Andrew Luck playing there.
Right, but then also, like, where was that caliber of quarterback available?
Oh, no, 100%. Like, I don't think that's the – maybe that's something we can talk about now, is that you and I and our editor, Nat Newell, we've had this conversation so many times throughout this offseason about, like, okay, if you didn't like Rivers, where were you going to go? And right now, God, you and I have been watching Tom Brady for the last 2 weeks going, ooh, that might have just fallen off a cliff real quick. Like, again, we've all learned probably not to doubt Tom Brady. He usually figures out a way to bring it back, but, like, can you seriously make the argument that he's that much better than Rivers at this point? I don't know. I don't know that you can. Foles has been a train.
I'll go further than that. I'll go further than that. You can't make that argument. You just can't. Like, he's throwing to the guys he's throwing to are Chris Godwin and Mike Evans are unbelievable. That's what everybody said when he went there. Like, that team is just full of talent at the wide receiver position.
Yep.
And Rivers doesn't have that here. He doesn't have this, just the Mike Evans, just throw it to him guy. It's really hard. If you watch the Giants game and the Saints game, and you can say, well, he played really well in other games. Yeah, that's true of Rivers too. Like, Rivers has had games and bad games. It's really, really hard to say that Brady would have been much better here. I think the one guy you can make an argument for is probably Teddy Bridgewater.
Yay, Teddy Two Gloves, my guy.
But Bridgewater has been – he's been solid, but I don't think he's far and away. First of all, if you sign Bridgewater, you have the implicit decision of, okay, is he our long-term guy? Is
that's,
he
not a long-term guy? That's where I make the argument for Rivers, is because – So say Bridgewater is slightly better in talent and execution this year, fine. But is he good enough that you needed to give him a 3-year deal, which is what the Panthers had to do to give him? I think it's only 2 years, like really. But still, did you want to commit to this guy long term, or did you want the out that Rivers gives you, which is a 1-year deal? Like
the Panthers are very seriously staring at one of those situations where, like, he plays well enough that you feel like you need to re-sign him, but he's not playing well enough to be considered one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And that's just, it's a really awkward spot to be in.
It's the Kirk Cousins spot where they were with Washington. It's what Minnesota had to deal with him. It's like, is he good, but is he how good? Like, what are we doing?
Also, as impressive as Teddy has been at times this year, he also has had some pretty critical late game mistakes.
For sure. And then we can go through the rest. I mean, like, we know the Colts talked to Dalton, or at least they at least had conversations with his agent, and I mean, again, it was one game, whatever. It didn't look great.
It didn't look great with, they don't have an offensive line in Dallas, but they sure do have weapons.
Right. Foles has been a disaster in Chicago. Trying to think who am I missing?
Cam Newton has not been good in New England.
No, I mean, again, and that's too, like, again, people remember, like, with Cam Newton, too, it's not just, like, plug and play with Cam Newton. That was, like, McDaniels had to reinvent an offense, which I'm not sure Frank Reich and these guys wanted to do, which, again, why would I don't think he's worth that versus what you had in Rivers. Like, I just don't – people get hung up on the $25 million, but I don't care. It's not my money. Like, it's not like they.
It also $25 million is not as much as it sounds like in today's NFL.
Well, it is compared to what Cam got.
Yeah, but Cam isn't playing well, so
hasn't
been good, so.
I just don't think it ever prevent. Like, my argument is always $25 million, $40 million, $4 million. It didn't prevent the Colts from doing anything they wanted to do in the offseason. I don't think Chris Ballard would say we didn't sign this giant free agent or whatever because we had to pay Jacoby and Phillip Rivers. They had plenty of cap space. That wasn't
right. We kind of slipped into some midseason review. It just happened. Oh, well.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get into the Titans. Obviously, you guys know we will. I want to ask you about we have a fun topic. Like I said, I have a fun non-football topic I want to get into with you that I'm not going to tell you about because I want fresh Joel without any preparation.
If it's about the election, I'll just hang up.
It is not. It is not. I will not go there. We can avoid that topic. I think people probably get enough of it at this point. No, you're right. Again, offensively, I just don't think, like, you and I were talking right before the thing. I think there's an argument to be made, and it's probably not a good argument for the – I mean, it's not a nice thing to say about the offense, but Rivers is probably the MVP of the team so far, offensively.
Yeah. It's the MVP of the offense is really probably the pass protection.
He's so big a part of that, but how quickly he throws.
That's a good point. That's an excellent point. It's probably Rivers. People would get really upset about that, but it is. Like, has he been great in every game? No. Has he had some really, really terrible games? Yes. But if you look at this offense right now, Indianapolis is – they're middle of the pack offensively. They're 19th in yards right now, 17th in yards per play. The passing game is middle of the pack, 14th and 15th in those two things. The running game is bad. The running game has really not been good in any game. I can't think of a single game where it was good.
No, it's been good in instances in some games, but never consistently good.
And when you factor in how much Rivers plays a role and how little how well they've been able to avoid sacks, I think that's partially saying that he's the MVP is partially an indictment on the offense.
Right. Exactly.
But when they've had stuff going, it's generally been because of him.
Yeah, and also you can't – like, I don't think it's fair to complain about the weapons he had – like, complain about the weapons and then also whine about Rivers. Like, you can't really have it both ways. Like, you can't say they've been hurt and they don't have good enough weapons and then be like, Rivers stinks. Like, it doesn't – that affects Rivers, you know? So, and again, I think he's been – I'm trying to look up his overall numbers. But I think, like you said, they're 17th in passing. I don't know what – I'm trying to find his passer rating that's the be-all, end-all metric. But 97.3. Like, that's comfortably good. Are good.
It's really hard to have watched the team every quarter, watch the running game struggle as much as it has, and then just think, you know, this is like, it's just hard for me to say that he's been the problem with the offense.
I agree. I completely agree. So yeah, like I said, we did kind of go into a diatribe on mid-season review, but let's we'll stick with Rivers because I think he's the key to winning against Tennessee. Like, just because of the running game hasn't been that good, and also Tennessee's run defense has been fine. Like, they haven't really been they got gashed by Dalvin Cook. They got beat up by James Robinson earlier in the year. But James Robinson weirdly has been doing that to everybody. He did it to the Colts. And they've been pretty good since. They haven't faced a lot of great running offenses, but they've been pretty good since.
I think more so than what Tennessee is. Tennessee's running defense essentially is what the Colts passing offense is right now. Like, right in the middle, kind of a little, like maybe a little bit off the middle in the lower.
That's end. To me, that's good enough to stop the Colts run game, right?
That's what I was going to say. The bigger issue is the Colts can't run the football against anybody. And so, yes, Rivers has to be pretty good because they just can't count on the running game. They just can't.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I'm looking now. Here's what they've done. 30 yards to David Montgomery last week. 62 yards to Giovanni Bernard. These are the high rushers. Giovanni Bernard 2 weeks ago. 82 to James Conner. 57 to David Johnson. 25 to Devin Singletary. 25 to T.J. Yeldon. I'm sorry, 50.
There are a lot of bad running backs in the league. Is that what
right? So week three, they got crushed by Dalvin Cook for 181 yards, which is what kind of like what's shaken their numbers but again, Dalvin Cook's doing this to just about everybody right now. So I don't hold that too hard against them. So yeah, the point is, I know the Titans just traded for Desmond King and he's a solid corner, but there's a reason that he was available for a 6th round pick. He's not that great. I don't really trust this Titans defense, and to me it looks like a Bengals secondary, which was, again, remember we talked about this going into that game, like the Bengals secondary is pretty good. They're actually not as bad as the bank, like traditionally you think the Bengals are. They're not bad, and Phillip Rivers still destroyed them. I think that is something that could happen against Tennessee this week or Thursday.
Well, Tennessee's defense is interesting because if you look at their per game yardage, you think, oh, that's, I mean, it's not great, but it's not like terrible. But in terms of points, they've been bad. And part of the reason they've been bad is, especially in some games, part of the reason they've been bad is, looking at the numbers now, they are the worst situational team defensively that like in the entire NFL.
Oh, really? Third down and fourth down?
Dead. They are dead last on third down and second to last in the red zone.
Ooh. Yeah. This is even more reason why I just don't. Phillip Rivers should have a good game.
Yeah, well, the other thing is, and the other giant weakness for Tennessee is they're 30th in the NFL in sacks per pass attempt. They don't get after the passer very well.
Right. Well, we talked about this with, and again, this is a good time to bring up. They cut Vic Beasley, and that was like a huge. I mean, I think it was like a $9 or $10 million, maybe it was $8 or $9 million, sweet like free agent swing and miss by John Robinson, the GM there, and then they signed Jadeveon Clowney, who is again, you and I kind of go back and forth on him. He's a very solid player, but he's never been a great pass rusher almost at any point in his career. So he's not going to give you that lift that you were hoping for on that side. Vic Beasley was kind of the guy that they were hoping would give him that lift.
He has zero. Clowney has zero sacks this year, and is dealing with a knee injury. May or may not play this week. We don't know.
So
they don't have a single. They don't have a single pass rusher with more than 2.5. They only have two guys. They only have 10 sacks in the season. Rivers, when Rivers hasn't been rushed this year, he's been pretty darn good.
Oh yeah. And not under pressure is This is a game he should win. Like he can go out and win for the Colts.
This is a game he should play well in for sure.
Yeah, for sure. This is why I like this matchup for the Colts, though. This is why I, again, I don't know if I'm spoiling later, but like this is why I'm picking the Colts again. Maybe I got burned doing that against Baltimore, but like I just like that matchup a lot for Rivers versus the Titans secondary. And the Colts defense is playing so well that they shut down. They're a very disciplined defense. They don't make a lot of mistakes in terms of flowing. Like remember last year we were talking about how fast this defense was, but sometimes they get caught flowing the wrong way a lot of the time on some misdirection stuff. Like Baltimore is a lot of misdirection, man, and they did not get caught out in any of that.
I could not have been more impressed with how they handled all the option stuff. It wasn't just that they had it covered, it was that they had most of it covered with two guys, no matter what it was. It was really remarkable. I think what happened in the passing game a little bit in the second half was just a reflection of how well they were playing against the other stuff, because that was more of a traditional type passing game, more traditional play action. And again, I do think that the first drive of the second half aside, I think some of it, the way they played in the second half, really needs to like be put on the offense for going 1 and out and 3 and out.
I have a little bone to pick with Frank Reich on that, by the way, because he was talking about recently about how everything goes together. You know, we don't say the offense had a great game and the defense didn't and vice versa. Like everything goes together. And then he said that, you know, it was a kind of a tale of two halves for both. Remember, you say this. He said it was a tale of two halves for both sides. Yes. And he said the defense, he said the offense only got to run four plays in the second half or in the second quarter or third quarter. I'm sorry, because the defense couldn't get off the field. And I was like, wait a second. That is a weird way of looking at what happened there, Frank.
The offense also didn't
did no favors for that defense. I was kind of like, oh, where was the Rivers interception, controversial though it may be, that you think that was helpful for the defense to be back on the field after like a 10 play drive?
Yeah, there's been a couple times this year when Frank's come back on day and then confirm that what the insider I wrote on Sunday was the correct way to look at the game. This time I wrote the Colts defense deserved better, and he didn't really back me up on that. But I feel like he read your story
and was like, no.
I'm sticking to my guns though.
You're right. You're 100% right.
I'm sticking to my guns though. The defense did not deserve what it got there in terms of a result. So yeah, no, it's interesting going into the Tennessee game though, because it's a really similar games in terms of like what you're dealing with in terms of just like the big picture, like run action, that kind of thing. From a defense to offense standpoint, but when you break it down, and especially when you start looking at what Tennessee's defense is versus what the Ravens is, it's really completely different. It should be a completely different game. Baltimore is really good on defense. I don't think we can stress that enough. That's one of the other elite defenses in the NFL.
They're number one. I mean, I was doing the DVOA rankings, looking through that stuff. They're the best defense in the NFL right now.
Tampa Bay. According to DVOA?
Yeah, I believe so, because I think Tampa Bay fell off a cliff after that Saints game.
As they should.
Yeah, I'm looking it up now, but they were number one in run defense for sure. I need to check the overall, but I'm pretty sure I'm right about this.
But yeah, so you're Tennessee is Tennessee is not that level of defense. They're just not.
I'm wrong, apparently. Baltimore is still fifth. Okay. Ridiculously, and Tampa Bay is still first. I don't understand that at all, but okay. Fine. Football.
Wait, what?
Yeah. I'm refreshing. Hold on. Let me make sure I got this right, because this is offensive to me in many levels. Let's see.
So that's not from last week.
Oh wait, yeah. Oh, it is. Did I do this wrong? 2020 through week 9.
They might not have this week's up yet. It's possible.
See, now this is looking.
No, they wrong. They do.
Yeah, and I pit special teams instead, so I'm really on top of it right now, guys. Sorry about that. Hit the wrong button. Yeah, Tampa Bay, they have Tampa Bay at 1, which is criminal. Pittsburgh 2, Colts 3, Bears 4, Baltimore 5. I think, to be honest with you, and they're all pretty closely ranked, I think it's take those 5 defenses and shuffle them any way you want. Those are the 5 best defenses in football.
I'm really disturbed by Tampa Bay being 1, though.
They were really – like, their numbers were off the charts before the New Orleans game, so I guess maybe it wasn't enough because they're
this
still
just
ranked –
brought them back to the pack a little bit or
something? Yeah, they're still ranked number 2 overall against the pass, and I think Drew Brees would go, LOL.
yeah, no, that's weird. That's a little bit weird, but –
Baltimore, to clarify where I was at, Baltimore is the number 1 ranked run defense.
Like that's a really good defense. Baltimore's a really good defense. Tennessee is not. Tennessee defensively is much further down that list. They are 18th.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see what it looks like. That the no pass rush thing, I think, is the biggest thing. You know, like,
yeah,
the team that's right next to them in DVOA is Cleveland. But to me, there's a giant difference between those two defenses as they match up to the Colts. And the giant difference is Cleveland has Myles Garrett. Tennessee doesn't have anybody like that at all.
No. Let me ask you, because we were talking my transition from Bones and Pick with Frank Reich, is I believe you have one of your own. And this is the way that the Jonathan Taylor situation has been handled. You and I talked about this on the Night After podcast, and you were a little – we were unclear as to what was going on. We got more answers this week about how the rotation works, who makes those decisions, and why those decisions were made. And I don't think, if I'm gauging you correctly, those answers were very satisfactory to you.
I don't fully understand what they're doing with Taylor right now.
Okay. This is good. This is what I thought you were going to say. Okay.
I don't really fully get it. I buy the Detroit hot hand argument a little bit more than a lot more actually than what happened in the Ravens game.
Yeah, to be fair, like Frank said that Jonathan Taylor got game flowed out. He only had 1 touch after that fumble, so somebody benched him.
Yeah, that's true. Well, part of it I think was my fault a little bit, and then I asked about the second half. Because it's clunkier to sit. It'd be clunkier asking a question to somebody to be like, well, he didn't have any carries in the second half against Detroit. And then after the fumble, he only had 1 carry. I try to keep my questions fairly concise. And so I said second half. And so he said, well, we only carried the ball 6 times in the second half. When I went back and looked, Jordan Wilkins had 9 carries after the fumble. Jonathan Taylor had 1. And I distinctly remember that 1 carry happened because Jordan Wilkins was getting examined by trainers. Like he was very – Jonathan Taylor played, but it was mostly on third downs when they didn't have the Nyheim Hines passing package in, and he didn't get the ball.
Nope. So he got benched. But let's be clear about this. I think Frank Reich was pretty clear about this. Frank Reich didn't bench him. It was Tom Rathman.
Right. Frank Reich said that he scripts the first 15 plays. Taylor obviously got the ball a lot in those first 15 plays. And then after that, he didn't get the ball at all. And after the first 15 plays, it really goes to the position coaches to rotate. Tom Rathman hates fumbles. We didn't get to talk to Tom Rathman to ask him about this. It's not our week to talk to assistant coaches, but Tom Rathman hates fumbles. And I don't feel like I'm taking too big of a leap here to say that Rathman decided to exact some like old school football justice on Taylor for fumbling.
It seems like when you say it, I'm like, well, but the evidence speaks for itself. It's very clear. They did not want him in that game.
Also, Frank Reich said something else that I think people on Twitter kind of like, were like, well, why didn't you do it? But it is true. Like, at least in my experience of covering Frank, that normally when somebody has a mistake like that, Frank likes to go back to them right away.
Right.
And he said prefer to do that. He said he would prefer after, you know, Taylor not having any fumbles the rest of the year, he would prefer to go back to him and get the ball in his hands. And the fact that it didn't happen makes me even more convinced that it's Rathman, because that is what Frank has done in the past with like drops and stuff. They go back to that guy later in the game.
Eric Ebron, ears perked up there on that. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, I mean, even Jack Doyle's fumble against Cincinnati, he ends up scoring the go-ahead touchdown, you know?
Yeah.
They do like to go back to people, which makes me think even more that Taylor got benched by Rathman. But here's why you said I have a problem with it. I don't think that was the right decision. I don't think it was the right decision in this game. I don't think it was the right decision for Taylor, who seemed remarkably upbeat. I'll say that. He seems like a really great kid, but like you can't tell me that him not getting another carry until Jordan Wilkins was hurt didn't like weigh on his mind a little bit.
Well, that's what I want to ask you is like, to me is you're toying with a guy's confidence right now, a rookie's confidence. And you can say all you want, we didn't bench him, but when he touches the ball one time in against Baltimore,
he knows.
Like he got benched and he knows it happened two times in a row.
He knows.
He's not an idiot.
And he knows that, yeah, he actually was accepted to Harvard. He's really smart. he knows. And I just don't like, okay, if you fumbled twice in the first eight games and then you have that fumble, okay, I can see that. He hadn't fumbled yet. Not one time.
No. Not lost a fumble. Hadn't even put it on the ground yet.
There had been zero fumbles for him so far. And you can't go with the Jordan Wilkins had a hot hand argument either, because Jordan Wilkins wasn't that good on Sunday.
No, Taylor was running pretty well up until that point.
Yeah. I don't fully understand it. I don't fully understand, especially when you needed a spark offensively. And just frankly, Wilkins wasn't getting it done. He just wasn't. To just go away from him completely. I was very puzzled by it. I've written two stories about it because I was puzzled by it. I do think, as much as we're saying it's Rathman's thing, I think Wright needs to realize that he hasn't seen 28 carry the ball and override Rathman and say, Taylor's got to go back in.
He was very clear about saying there was nothing over the headsets for saying we need this guy in or we don't need that guy in. Obviously, there are certain plays where they have certain running backs in, but there was no like put him in or don't or take him out. And I think to your point, I think Frank Reich occasionally might need to go, we need to see this guy in.
Yeah, like maybe in this case, I know he trusts his assistant coaches. Maybe this time he needed to overrule one a little bit. Like, you just run a risk with Taylor of, I don't know, like he hadn't been great, but he'd started to get like a little bit of momentum before the Lions game. And whatever momentum he might have had has to be gone now.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see against Tennessee, but
even if he's not acknowledging it, it's got to be weighing on him that he's been benched 2 weeks in a row.
Let me put that out there, by the way. You wrote the story about him kind of putting that adversity behind him, but I just want to give him credit for coming out after getting benched 2 weeks in a row and talking to the media yesterday and talking about it and talking about the struggles. Like he deserves credit for that. There aren't a lot of guys.
And even more so when you consider that this is really like the first time in his entire NFL or in his entire football career that he hasn't been just like on a meteoric star shooting upward.
Right.
I know some people are like, well, yeah, he wasn't that good in the first couple games this year. I was like, yeah, he was But he was pretty close to a 1,000-yard pace. Like, I don't think that you can consider that like a giant setback. Whereas these last two games, like, you ran into a wall a little bit. It'll be interesting to see how he bounces back. It'll be really interesting to see what the running back rotations look like, regardless of who's making the call, like, especially after the first 15 plays. Because Frank Reich puts in which running backs he wants for the first 15 plays. So I think we might see 3 or 4 carries from Jonathan Taylor in those first 15 plays. After that.
Yeah, we'll see.
When Rathman gets a hold of the rotation, then I want him to see what goes on.
So let me ask you a non-Jonathan Taylor, but running game question. There was a good question asked by, I think, Kevin Bowen during Frank Reich asking, like, why didn't we see more Nyheim Hines during this last game? And he said, you know, we actually gave some of those Nyheim Hines plays to DeMichael Harris. And I thought two of them, at least, were those jet sweepy type plays. My question to you is Frank Reich has been pretty resolute the entire season about the running game's fine. We're making progress. It's been fine. Were those like jet sweeps to DeMichael Harris? Was that him conceding? We have a problem in the run game. We need to get weird.
Yes. 100% yes. 100% yes. That's it. Like, and also it's a little bit of an acknowledgement that Nyheim hasn't been good in the running game at all.
He hasn't. Bad in the run game.
We'll just say it outright. Like, Michael Harris was pretty good on those two jet sweeps.
He is good. I don't have a problem with it, but like, again,
I do think that that's an acknowledgement that they're trying more stuff. Maybe they saw something in the Ravens defense that makes them more likely to do that. But I think it is an acknowledgement that it's like, okay, we got to find something to jumpstart some stuff here because it's not working. That stuff hasn't been working with Hines. They haven't really run a whole lot of like the reverse stuff with him.
Right.
But I also think that he's more of an alert than DeMichael Harris is until this week. DeMichael Harris.
And that is what Frank said, was that people kind of get clued in. Nyheim had a really good game against Detroit. They might be a little more clued into him on things like that. That's why they try to disguise it with DeMichael Harris. I kind of wanted to write that story, what I was suggesting this week, but I kind of want to see it again against Tennessee before I jump to that conclusion.
We'll see what they do there. I like DeMichael Harris. Nyheim Hines. I mean, the other thing is, like, we're talking about lack of touches for Nyheim Hines, but he played as many snaps as Wilkins and Taylor did.
He's right.
And that's, you know, that's, I don't think Rivers throws it to you if you're, I don't think Rivers ignores people if they're open. So especially running backs, that's never been his bent. So I think that they're, you know, some of it is just, this just wasn't a Nyheim Hines game. Like,
yeah. It has to be okay. I'm fine with that. Let's move on to the defense real quick. Cause I had Rivers things, but we've been going for about 40 minutes on the offense, 45 minutes on the offense. So we'll move on to the D. Cause we weirdly, you and I wrote more about you wrote about Jonathan Taylor a couple of times, but you have a bigger story on the defense coming out today, or if it's not out already, it might be already by the time you guys are listening to this.
Yeah. We don't know. I sent it into the editor right before the start of this. So who knows?
It's probably up, and you can tell us what it's about in a minute, but we'll kind of go big picture. I wrote a story too about how good they've been against the run, just in general, against different kinds of run, offenses as well. But, it's weird because I don't have a ton to say about the defense other than it's been exceptional. I think Grover Stewart, can we start with this? If they don't pay Grover Stewart soon, he might price himself out.
Yeah, he's been pretty good.
I posted a clip of that first play where he just blows up Bozeman, the left guard, and like pretty much runs him into Lamar Jackson. Like, I could watch that play 100 more times. He's incredibly good.
Yeah, the interesting thing with their run game is how much some teams have tried to keep doing it, I think. Cleveland was up, so they're trying to – and Cincinnati was up, so those two teams are trying to hold on to speed.
I'd say it was only up in the in the second quarter. It was pretty much over by then.
Yeah, Cincinnati ran it 32 times. Does that shock you? Because it shocked me.
Yeah, I would have – well, I mean, they're trying to keep Joe Burrow alive over there, Joel. So
that's true. Darius Leonard said something interesting yesterday about the running game where
Yeah.
Because you challenged him on the, hey, I don't think we played that great.
I did, and he finally conceded that they did play great, by the way.
And he was like, but he was like, for me, if they give up, if we give up more than 100 yards, that's a failure.
Yeah.
They've given up more than 100 yards in a game three times this year. But I have a caveat with that.
Yeah, he's wrong. Just can I? I'm incorrect, Darius. Wrong.
In those three games, it took the Jets 29 carries to get to 109 yards.
Yeah.
It took Cleveland 33 carries to get to 124 yards, and it took the Ravens 38 carries to get to 110 yards.
2.9 yards per carry is a win, Darius. Just accept it. It's a win.
Well, it's even more of a win because the Ravens haven't had a yards per carry that low in the last season and a half.
Yeah, they were exceptional against the run. And Darius kind of smiled. I asked him about that. He kind of smiled and was like, yeah, we played pretty well against the run, but I don't like losing. And I think he was trying to say I was just pissed off we lost. But he was right. He did say that we'd want to hold him under 100. And he doesn't care. He's like, I don't care who it is, which implied, by the way, that combined quarterbacks and running backs it took to get barely to 110 on 38 carries. Like, also, like, if you just talk like designed run plays, they were well under 100. There were a couple of those Lamar scrambles that put him over 100. Like,
yeah, no, that's a good point. Like, most of the Lamar was their leading rusher, and a lot of his was on scramble type stuff.
They kept him pretty contained in the first half, and then he scrambled for a few in the second half that were enough to put him over 100. But they would have held the Ravens under 100 yards had it not been for a couple of, not even the long scrambles, just a few, just kind of like really just kind of stacked a few of them.
They now go up against the only running back in the last 42 games to go over 100 yards against them.
Have you looked at his lead in the AFC rushing?
I have. It's the NFL. It's Dalvin Cook and Derrick Henry over 800 yards, and then nobody else has over 600.
No one's even got to six yet. He's got a 255-yard lead over Josh Jacobs in the AFC. It's like a joke at this point.
Well, and this is a really interesting matchup to me because Henry is good and Henry – oh, I shouldn't say Henry's good. Henry's great.
Yeah.
Unbelievable player. But the last team to have even like remotely some success against them with their running backs or against the Colts with their running backs is Cleveland. Like, you got to go all the way back to that game.
Yeah. Yeah. And they weren't like Kareem Hunt had some nice runs.
They weren't over. They were even with the big run by De'Ernest Johnson at the sorry, I was getting all the, there's a lot of running backs whose first initial is D and the last name is Johnson.
Yep. David Duke.
His 28 yarder that kind of sealed that game. Their running back still didn't get over 4 yards a carry. But if you look at like what they've done against some of these other ones, like the Bengals running backs under 3 yards a carry, the Ravens running backs, nothing.
Well, we joked about
Detroit,
it at the beginning.
Nothing.
Dalvin Cook didn't really do much against the Colts, and he's been ripping people apart.
Yeah. They've been so good against traditional running backs. It makes me wonder, like, I don't know, that this is there's a pretty decent chance that Derrick Henry's in for a real rough night.
I mean, you saw the Bears did a pretty good job against them, and they don't even have as good a run defense as the Colts. They've actually been kind of exposed by the run a few times this year. I thought it was fun listening to Darius Leonard talk about the key to Derrick Henry, which is like a lot of times, like you kind of see him as a big back that you don't want to meet in the hole. But Darius Leonard was just like, that's the complete opposite. You'd love to meet him in the hole. Though, let's say this, the last time Darius Leonard really met Derrick Henry in a hole, he got a concussion. So that set him out for like 3 weeks. So let's like, he's still dangerous in there. And again, like, remember there was like earlier this year, there was that ridiculous Ryan Clark stuff about Derrick Henry being like fake tough or fake brave, I think it was, about how he only runs hard when he's outside, which is stupid. That said, Darius Leonard was very clear about saying you don't want to get him in open space because would it surprise you? I don't know if you read my story yet, probably not, but like, again, because it came out just like last night, but like, would it surprise you to know that he has the seventh fastest carry this year by Next Gen?
No, that doesn't surprise me because it's the 94 yarder.
Yeah, he was at.
I can't remember who they were playing, but I remember the 94.
Houston. It was again, and it was over 21 miles per hour. Derrick Henry.
He's he's always kind of been like that. And if you think about, I don't know, I kind of always, every big run of his that I can think of is on the edge, or it's a screen or something. Like it's not usually, he doesn't have like the, there's no like Derrick Henry beast mode run. You know what I mean? There's
no, yeah.
There's no beast quake run, or like, it, Bettis feels like a guy that was like that. Just be pinballing off of people.
Well, that's the thing. Like, he doesn't pinball off of people so much as his stiff arm is insane. Like, people don't get that close to him because he can just throw you away.
Yeah. That's a good way. He's really good. He's really good. And he's much better in the open field than you'd expect a 250-pound dude to be.
Which, by the way, that was the other part about this that I loved, that Darius Leonard was like, they list him at like 238, by the way. Oh no, I'm sorry. They list Derrick Henry at like 247, and Leonard was like, it's 250, 260. And the fun part about this was the Colts actually, you know, the Colts list Darius Leonard at 230, but he, I listened to an interview with him.
Darius is like 220.
He plays at 220. And so he's giving up 25 to 30 pounds to Derrick Henry, which is insane. Linebacker versus running back. And that just still baffles me.
Yeah, no, it's, you know who Derrick Henry running is a little bit like?
Who?
Cam.
Yeah, that's a good call. Yeah, that's a great comparison.
He's a little bit like Cam.
With a much better stiff arm.
And just the size and just the unbelievable size and speed combo and infield running ability. That's probably the most interesting, like, the funny thing is, that's the most interesting matchup, but the matchup that I think is going to matter the most for the game is Ryan Tannehill against the Colts passing defense.
Yeah, it's the play action. It's the discipline. Like, again, we've talked about this a million times. Xavier Rhodes is having an incredibly good year, but if he gets caught peeking on a play action pass, it's going to kill the Colts.
Yeah, and one of the other things that's interesting is that Tannehill really doesn't throw interceptions this year. He's only thrown 3.
I don't think he threw much last year, did he?
I don't think so either. I don't think so. He's only thrown 3 this year. He threw 6 last season.
Yeah, like 13 games.
But I'm also interested because I was looking up his game, the last 3. You guys are getting a preview of me doing things, by the way.
That's usually what these podcasts are. It's like a lot of, like, we get into some things. Yeah.
His last 3 games, so Ryan Tannehill's last 3 games, he only has 1 interception. He does have 6 touchdown passes. Seems great, right? He's only completing 46. He's only completed 46 out of 81 passes in those 3 games. Which is 56.8%.
Is that all weighted down by just a bad game against the Bears, or was there?
No, because against both Cincinnati and Pittsburgh, he only completed 60% of his passes.
Okay, yeah, and like I said, the Bears and Pittsburgh, again, we just talked about the elite defenses and the Colts being in that same group, so those are probably good comparisons to make. Is the Bears?
They lost the 2 games prior to the Bears game. They won the Bears game 24-17, but this little stretch here. As it's been, he hasn't been as, in the beginning of the season, Ryan Tannehill looked like an MVP candidate. He was that good. Yardage-wise, all the numbers, touchdowns was that good. The last 3 weeks, they've been a little bit less efficient. They've been less efficient in the passing game. Let's just put it that way. A lot less efficient. And so, you know, he's also taken 6 of his 11 sacks in the last 3 games too.
Again, Pittsburgh and Chicago, 2 of the best pass rushing teams in football.
True. So that's interesting to me too. It's interesting. Like I think the game for the Colts defense hinges on, do they make Ryan Tannehill look the way he's looked the last 3 weeks? Because if they do, it's probably pretty good for them. Just considering how good their run defense is.
Yep.
If he's back to where he was in the first 5 games, where he's completing high 60s, you know, all the way up to 75 completions, that's probably bad because he's not really going to throw it a short to intermediate range. He's chucking it downfield.
Right. And they have the weapons to do it. I mean, again, I know Corey Davis is more their intermediate guy, their short and intermediate guy. And AJ Brown is going to be the guy that can beat you deep. He also will beat you deep and by like with like 40 yards, but it'll be on like an 8 yard slant. He's another guy that is deceptively fast for a guy his size. He's kind of in that DK Metcalf. I think he's kind of in that same mold. I don't think he's quite as freakish, but probably in the same mold as Metcalf. So yeah, their weapons are scary. But again, I just kind of like the matchup defensively, being able to shut down Derrick Henry, knowing you can take, again, this has been the Colts formula all season is turn every, like it's take the one hand away from every offense, take away the run game and then pin your ears back and go after the passer. And if they can get a lead, that'll be even better for them. So I think early on, you know, again, this Colts offense being kind of limited in some ways, it's very important for them to get out to a good start, don't fall behind. Make sure if you're up even better, because that puts your defense in a good spot, but stay close. And then you can kind of do the things you want to do.
The last thing to talk about is we've done all this matchup stuff. I'm about to write a bunch of matchup stuff that you guys will probably read tomorrow. I'm sort of fond of saying that you kind of throw a bunch of stuff out because it's Thursday night and weird stuff happens on Thursday night.
Yeah.
But I'm questioning myself right now. I don't know if I believe that. I'm trying to decide, like, the games we've watched this year on Thursday night, have they pretty much gone the way we'd expect them to?
I don't know. You have to tell me which games are you talking about.
The Packers had to fly to San Francisco, and they – which normally, like, a team going to the West Coast on a Thursday night short week, like, you usually expect them to play terribly, and they did not play terribly.
Yeah, but they played the 49ers, like, C team, so –
Yeah, but the Niners had most of their defensive guys, like, that they've had this season. I know Bosa's out, but they had most they've had this season. Buccaneers at Bears.
I would say that, yeah, based on what we saw the last, like, again, like, what we saw from the Bucs against the Giants, what we saw from the Bucs against the Saints, that maybe wasn't the fluke that it looked like at that point.
The Giants and Eagles game was really bad, but that's not a Thursday thing.
No, I was just going to say, the only thing to talk about that game is Daniel Jones falling. That is literally the only thing that needs to be discussed.
That's an NFC East thing.
Skip that game. Doesn't count. They're playing again this week, by the way.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. It's not on national television, so that's great. It's not
good. Then as far as I'm concerned, they're not
playing. Exactly. We're all spared.
Falcons at Panthers, I think. It's hard to remember that game, but I feel like it pretty much went the way you'd expect it to.
I can't remember that one.
So maybe I might be wrong. Like, I always think of Thursday as like a throw everything you know out because Thursday messes with people. But that might be wrong. That might not be the way it's going this year.
That's fair. All right, I have one question before it's related to the Colts, before we move on to our non-football topic of the day. Is Matt Eberflus a head coach next year?
No.
Why?
Because the NFL hates defensive coaches.
Yeah, that's what I think too. I don't know. I don't know how many openings there are going to be. I mean, there are already a few. Like, I don't think Atlanta and Houston are going to hang on to their interim guys.
Atlanta is not going to go defense because defense just didn't work out for them. And that's consistent thing in hedging is that they flip, like, you're going to go against what you just had.
The problem, though, is that, like, usually if you have that coach, that side of the ball is pretty good, and the Falcons defense is a train wreck. So I don't know.
Yeah, but I still think they probably don't go back to another defensive coordinator.
I agree. I think Eberflus probably smells too much like Dan Quinn. You know what I mean? Like, it's just very similar kind of,
To Arthur Blank, for sure.
Yeah.
Houston is hiring somebody from the Patriots.
You think it's McDaniels? You're just going there?
I mean, that's everything if Jack Easterby is still in control, right?
Right.
Yeah, they just want the Patriots. So it'll be somebody with ties to New England, probably.
Hold on, let me just go through the NFL's teams who might fire coaches and just see where you're at. Jets? You don't take that job if you're Eberflus, do you?
I wouldn't take that job if I was Bill Belichick, like a young one. They're gonna hire that team's gonna hire a quarterback guy because they're probably gonna be drafting Trevor Lawrence.
Okay. Broncos, again, if they fire Fangio, they won't hire another defensive guy.
They'll hire a quarterback because they'll have a quarterback. They'll hire a quarterback guy because Drew Lock.
There's been some talk about Anthony Lynn, but I have a hard time believing they do that. You think they fire? You think Anthony Lynn keeps his job? They're 2-6.
If they fire Anthony Lynn,
that's a job if Eberflus should be serious about if it's out there.
Yeah, but they will also go for a quarterback guy.
You think? I mean, they already have their quarterback.
Yeah, but like time and time again, like all you need to know about what teams do when they have a young, quarterback, whenever they have a head coaching opening, is look at when the Bucs got rid of Lovie Smith and promoted Dirk Cutter.
Yeah, see, but I think like you could do like what the Cowboys did, which was like it's been good offensively. Let's keep Kellen Moore and bring in another head coach, and then especially again they weirdly brought in an offensive minded coach. But if they did it with it, like if the Chargers were like keep the offensive guys, firing Anthony Lynn, bring in Eberflus. But again, I don't think that's. I don't know. I don't think they're going to fire Anthony Lynn. I think he's too good of a coach. I know they're 2-6, but I think he's too good of a coach.
The history for me is like it took forever for Vic Fangio to get hired, despite him being one of the best defensive coordinators in football forever.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's other guys like that I'm not thinking of.
Well, let me ask you this too. Did with yesterday's ruling on incentivizing hiring minority coaches, it probably hurt Matt Eberflus, right?
Maybe. I'll believe that the NFL is going to do that. That's going to make a difference for the NFL when I see it.
By the way, that was no judgment on what happened. I'm just saying like him being a white coach, it might hurt again, white coach and on defense. I think that may be working against him now just because of the, again, you get picks. Picks are pretty valuable. I don't know.
The NFL is, I don't know. They're depressingly slow on this to
I agree.
I think I saw that and thought, okay, I'm glad that they're doing that, but
yeah,
they're bucking against like just an awful a bad record of hiring there.
All right, real quick, I'm gonna finish these up. Bengals, they're not firing Zach Taylor, right?
No.
Jaguars, Marone?
Yes, maybe, probably.
That's gonna be a quarterback guy though, right?
Quarterback guy, 100%.
Okay. I mean, they said McCarthy safe in Dallas.
If they fire McCarthy, like throw everything out the window. Who knows?
Okay. Giants? They're not going to fire Joe Judge after 1 year, right?
No.
Okay. Nobody in the West. Bears? I think they go quarterback guy though. Defense isn't the problem. They don't need to bring in a defensive guy.
That's true. That's true. This, a lot of what we're talking about here is why it's so hard for defensive coaches to get hired, because anybody has a young quarterback, they think they have to have a quarterback guy in the head job, which isn't necessarily. I don't think that's necessarily true. But
no, I agree. Vikings again. I don't think they're firing Zimmer, but he's too similar. Patricia is a defensive guy, so I don't think the Lions would go that route again. I guess it's down to, and we just talked about Atlanta. And Caroline is not firing Rule. He's too good. So there you go. That was every team that might fire a coach.
I don't think that that's necessarily. It's probably one of the things that annoys me the most about the NFL is that they ignore defensive coaches.
Yeah, I agree.
Like in my people would be like, well, Fangio hasn't been that great in Denver. I'm like, well, I mean, yeah, also had teams that are really hurt. Like, and I'll also throw back at you Brian Flores being incredible in Miami. You know, some of these defensive guys deserve more time sometimes when they get these jobs too, where they get fired right away because of the quarterback thing. It's just the way the NFL goes. Everything is geared towards developing the quarterback and developing the offense. And so that's working against Matt Eberflus. That's, people can wonder like how he'd interview, that kind of thing. But in reality, teams just overwhelmingly hire offensive coaches.
I agree. And I think I think he'll get interviewed. I think he'll get, I mean, the way the Colts defense is played, I think he'll be part of the interview process for at least a couple teams, but I don't. Yeah.
There's some guys in the defensive coordinator pipeline ahead of him.
Yeah. Saleh.
Saleh's the big one. That's the one that like really sticks out to me. Cause the Niners are playing the game against Green Bay, notwithstanding, They're playing pretty decent defense this year for a team that lost like two of its most important defensive linemen.
Agreed. Salah's good. And he's a good coach. And his guys seem to love him too.
Three if you count the fact. Yeah, they're seventh in yards on defense despite losing Buckner and Bosa and then Solomon Thomas. Like, that's it's impressive.
Agreed. I'm trying to think. There's another guy. There's another defensive coordinator out there that I think people are hot on, but I can't remember who. It's not coming.
Yeah, it feels like there's one, too, that, like, missed last cycle, but I can't remember either.
So, yeah, like I said, I think Eberflus will be part of the rotation of interviews, but, again, I just have a hard time believing he'll get a job, which stinks for him because I think he's probably earned it this year. Just doesn't seem to be out there for him right now. So you might be right. You might have to be like Fangio and just wait forever. Okay. I can't credit myself with the idea. I heard this while listening to a podcast. But today or this month, actually, not we're actually pretty close. It's like we're like a week away from the official 25th anniversary of Toy Story coming out.
Okay.
So Joel, your top five Pixar movies.
Oh, this is good. That's a good one.
And I looked it up earlier. I can give you the list if you like, but there's only been 22.
I'm going right now just to make sure I have the list.
Go ahead. And again, I'm just going to make you pick the five in no order, and then maybe I might make you sort them, but just five in no order.
Okay.
That way you can help your – yeah. I'll even write them down for you as you go, and then we can go through it.
The Incredibles is definitely on there.
Okay.
Toy Story's on there.
The original?
The original.
Okay. Three is great, so.
Inside Out's on there.
Oh, you and I are similar lists.
Onward is on there. And for the fifth one, Toy Story 3 is the one. Oh, ooh, this is tough. I might go Up. I might put Up in there.
No, Up has a great first 10 minutes, but after that, it kind of gets flat.
You think so? Okay.
Up's first 10 minutes are up there with like, it's like Academy Award winning type of stuff. And then it's like.
Up's first 10 minutes are also like the leader in, I was not prepared for this.
Oh my God. It's insane. Like I was, by the way, like I had seen it late and people were like, you're going to cry. I'm like, whatever. Now I know it. And just like full tears. Like just, I mean, out of my mind. If you don't cry during that, after that, you're like, you're not human.
Yeah, no. That's yeah. I'll go Toy Story 3. I want to go Coco, but Coco didn't. I like Coco, but I don't think it's quite up there with the other ones. I think for me, there's a clear top four. I can tell you right now what I think the best one is.
Oh, go ahead. But you've left out one that is contender for my top spot. So, but go ahead. What's your number one?
The number one is Inside Out. It's not close.
See, okay. I love Inside Out. The only reason I've only seen it once. And it's in my top five, but I don't. I have to see it again. I think to put it maybe number one.
Conceptually, like what they came up with in understanding all of the feelings and stuff like that, it's like.
Yep, I agree.
Unbelievable! Like I thought that movie maybe deserved like best screenplay, like against everything else.
I remember when it came out, and I was like, I should look up the year. What year was that?
2015.
I remember like seriously going, that should be a contender for best picture. It won best animated picture.
It was nominated for best original screenplay. And like, I remember watching it and thinking like, I was like 10 minutes in and I was like, this is just unbelievable writing. Like the thinking here is just incredible.
Wait, am I wrong? Was it not nominated for best picture? It wasn't. That's a crime. I would take it over The Revenant that year.
Oh, this is a good movie year, though. It's a good movie year.
I take it over the. I like The Revenant. I know, actually, I didn't really like The Revenant. The Martian.
Nobody. I don't think anybody really likes watching The Revenant. It was painful to watch that movie.
That was like it's all. Okay, listen. It just felt like Leo on screen begging for an Academy Award. That's all it felt like to me. And I was like, I just give it to him already. God.
No, and I'm a Western guy too. Like I like Westerns.
Yeah.
That one didn't do it for me.
All right. My hot take is I'm not a big spotlight guy. I'm just not. I'm sorry. I
disagree with you wildly.
I would take Inside Out over Spotlight. You know why?
Wildly.
Because I do not understand Mark Ruffalo. Why do people think he's good at acting?
Oh, see, I felt like, see, the thing is, though, and this is getting really into, like, inside baseball stuff because we both worked in newspapers, but, like, I feel like the guy he was playing there is a reporter that I've seen that's been at every paper I've ever worked for.
Fair enough. I mean, again, but he's – him screaming they knew gets made fun of a lot, and it should. It's the most overacting I think I've ever seen in a good movie. It's a good movie. I'm not saying it's good. It's a bad movie. It's way over the top.
No, I that guy, like, that guy exists. Like, that guy's a newspaper staple. Like, it's hard for me to say that's a bad performance because, like, his performance more than any, I was like, oh, there's like that. Every newspaper has that dude. No, Inside Out's number one on this list. It's number one.
Let me just say that. Here's my other problem. People immediately started comparing Spotlight to All the President's Men, and I was like, get the hell out of here.
I need to rewatch All the President's Men. I haven't seen it in a long time. And
it's the best newspaper movie by like 7 miles.
This is what happens to me. I get all these things. I'm like, oh, I should watch this movie. I haven't watched it in a really long time. And then you know what happens, Jim?
We cover football.
Buffalo is playing like Ohio on a Tuesday. And I'm like, yeah, I'll do this.
You're right. It's a great movie year. My point, by the way, on Inside Out is that I take it over like 4 of the movies I got nominated that year. I like even Bridge of Spies, which I loved. I would think I might take Inside Out over.
I would take Inside Out over Bridge of Spies.
Maybe Brooklyn too. I loved Brooklyn, but yeah. The ones I'm like, give me The Big Short and Mad Max and Inside Out, and I'll be a happy man. But anyway, back to your, so Inside Out is the clear one for you?
Yeah, it's not close.
Really? Can I? Okay.
I can't. I could not get over the just sheer creativity and ingenuity of coming up with that that concept and the way they executed it.
I completely agree. It's again, it would be in my, it's, I gotta see it again, but it's in my top five as well. Or I'm gonna,
also,
I'm gonna,
it also includes Bill Hader, which is a giant win for me.
Yeah. I'm gonna disagree with you on Onward. I'm gonna reply. I like Onward a lot. I really did. But to me, there are two that you left out. Wally is phenomenal.
I have never seen Wally.
Oh, you haven't seen Wally. Okay. That's probably why. It's one of the great love stories of our time, Joel. I'm telling you.
That is not how I was expecting it to be pitched.
I know. It is, though. It's great. It's a great love story. It's an incredibly cool idea. It's got some really good ideas about good thoughts on global warming and protecting the earth that we live on. A lot of good messages there. I love that. Like I said, it's phenomenal. So I would put that there and take out Onward. And then my other pushback on your list would be to take out Incredibles, which I also love. And I'm putting Finding Nemo there. I love Finding Nemo.
Yeah, Finding Nemo hasn't aged well for me. I think I liked it when I first watched it. And now, like,
really?
And now, like, whenever I'm like going through Disney Plus and like about to put something out for my kids, like, I kind of skip past Nemo on purpose.
Oh, I will say this. I think Dory is one of the greatest Pixar characters of all time. I think she's Ellen DeGeneres, just is amazing. And I love the world. It's kind of what you talked about with Inside Out. I think they cover so much underwater world better than anything I've ever seen. Like, it's just something I've never quite seen before. And it's gorgeous to look at.
Well, some of these I have to reconvince my kids. Like, for full disclosure, Onward's going to be in the top five for me, even though I think it's probably not like as well made as some of these other ones, because my kids
love. Yeah, it's a personal movie. I'm fine with that. I get that.
Yeah.
Right. I Coco is one that, given my Mexican heritage, has been like, it was very like, I, it was fun. Like, I loved that a lot.
Yeah, I really like the music in Coco. I think the only reason I wanted to put it in there, and I think the only reason I didn't was that it kind of freaked my kids out a little bit.
Yeah, it's, you know what? It's a little, it may be a little bit more like the, like 8 to 9 year old kid versus the little bit younger than that.
Yeah, I think it freaked them out just a little bit. I love the music.
Yeah, it's great. Another tearjerker by the end, by the way, in case for, I don't want to ruin it for people that haven't seen it.
I can tell you the franchise that I would just throw out of Pixar if I was doing it.
Are you going to throw out Cars?
I'm throwing Cars out. It's gone.
So I actually have never seen Cars. So I can't make that judgment with you.
I just like if you're saying like one franchise or something has to go, it's Cars.
Well, there's only what? How many franchises are there? It's Incredibles, Toy Story, and Cars. Oh, and Nemo, Finding Dory also.
But yeah,
oh, and Monsters. Man, you're right. Never mind. There's more of them. Okay.
I just don't need Cars. I just don't need
Monsters Inc. Get anywhere near the top five for you?
I like Monsters, Inc. It's not near the top five, though.
Okay. I think the only one you and I think truly disagree on, I think, is like, I like The Incredibles quite a bit, but I would be down. It would be down my list. Actually, by the way, I will say super underrated. People didn't talk about, I thought Incredibles 2 was a lot of fun.
So this is what I think on The Incredibles. I think on The Incredibles, if you watch it now, it feels like it's just part of the whole superhero movie genre, but it came out in 2004.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. It did it better than most.
It's pre-Iron Man. It's pre...
Is it pre-Iron Man?
Yeah.
That's impressive then. Yeah, Iron Man's 4 years later. Wow.
It might be pre-Batman Begins. It is.
Batman Begins is 2005. So.
So at this point, the superhero movies that are out are like basically the Spider-Man movies.
The Spider-Man movies are the first good ones since like original Batman and some Superman.
And they nailed it. Like they nailed, like The Incredibles nailed some stuff that like they were going to be dealing with like in these movies like 15 years down the road.
This is a great take. This might be your best take yet. I love this. This is a great
superheroes because like they're already doing the public might not like superheroes thing. Like they're already doing it in that movie. And also just the idea of like saying, okay, we've been making some like pretty normal kids movie stuff, toys. There's two animal movies in here. Monsters are basically animals. Like it's pretty like normal in terms of kid movie stuff. We're going to do superheroes and we're going to come up with our own superheroes that no one's heard of. Like, cause they're completely original creations.
Sure.
Before the superhero wave. They're not trying to tap into anything because it's not really there yet. Like
this is your best argument for anything you've ever done. I will say too, I just watched the Pixar, like the Pixar movie on Netflix, like the, you know, the documentary about them. And I remember The Incredibles is the first time they bring in an outside guy. Brad Bird was like came in from non-Pixar world. Like animation and came and did that. And so I think you like to your point, that was when they finally branched out into something a little bit different and crushed it, obviously. So
also to do the superheroes as a family, which isn't like that's not a superhero thing.
It's a little Fantastic Four-y. Like they've kind of tapped into Fantastic Four a little.
It's Fantastic Four and a little bit like this sort of happened a little bit in like the X-Men.
Yes.
But to do it as like a nuclear family where the kids are superheroes too is a little bit like, that's a little bit off the normal like superhero thing. You know, because like the way to normally do a superhero is you've got like one loner superhero who maybe has like sidekick thing. So there's a lot of stuff about that The Incredibles did that kind of bucks against the genre or predicts where the genre is going before the genre's even really got its feet off the ground. Because like superhero movies, I think most people agree that superhero movies didn't really become like start getting on the snowball rolling downhill that they are now until Batman Begins and Iron Man. Those were the franchises that people were like, oh wow, okay, so we're doing this like more seriously than sort of the campy stuff we've done before.
So I just like when you were talking about family superheroes, I remembered I had a Disney Channel like childhood flashback. And there was a family It was called Up. I just Googled it. Up, Up and Away. Came out in 2000. It was a Disney Channel movie about a family of superheroes that I was. Do you remember this movie? Am I crazy?
I did not. The Erickson household did not have Disney Channel.
Okay. Okay. Well, then you missed what was a very subpar movie. So Disney Channel had some hits, but that wasn't one, I don't think. So.
Also, I can't take credit for this, but if you look at the plot of Iron Man 3, it's pretty much just the Incredibles plot.
I can't remember the plot for Iron Man 3.
Like,
I don't think it was a very memorable movie.
There's a part where Iron Man gets captured by the bad guy and held up, and the assistant, who is ambivalent about what the other guy is doing, decides to save Iron Man. Like, it's like, that's like, I'm like, I've seen that. That's in the Incredibles.
Oh, okay.
There's some pretty strong ripoffs in there.
That's embarrassing, frankly, for Iron Man. They should be able to do better than, like, well, that's to say, like, I mean, if you're going to rip off a movie, The Incredibles is probably a good one to do. But, yeah, that's it. I don't know. I'll have to reconsider everything now that you've made this great argument for The Incredibles.
I completely threw you off by telling you they predicted the genre.
I just didn't realize it was 2004. That's a really good point. Like, I did not.
They're way ahead. Batman Begins isn't even out yet. Like, I remember like watching the Spider-Man movies, but there wasn't this feeling like there was going to be a bunch more of these superhero movies made.
Right. No, I agree with you.
The X-Men movies were kind of out, but I think anybody who watched the X-Men movies know that that was like a real like in and out type of thing. Like, yeah. Oh, I'm really into this. Wait, what did they just do?
Yeah, that's because the first two were good and the third one was like an abomination. But much like Spider-Man, the third one was just ridiculous. Yeah. He actually sings and dances in the street and it's just the worst.
My favorite part about that is how many times it's been referenced in Spider-Man movies since then.
Oh God, it's great. It's like, actually, you're right. That is the great part of that. Also, have you watched, God, we're just revealing all of like, just, I just love watching kids movies. Did you ever see Lego Batman?
No.
Oh man. Them going back and just ripping old Batman movies. It's so good. It's so good. And Will Arnett playing like super over the top, like dark brooding Batman. It's really good. Like, I watched that movie. I'm like, this is not for kids. There's nothing kid about this movie. It's all for adults who grew up with Batman. So anyway,
yeah,
you don't have to give me, if you get me started on Lego movies, we might never end this podcast though. So
I haven't really seen any of them. The only one, the only one I've really seen is the original, and the reveal at the end is great.
You reveal at the end is great. The whole movie is great. I love that movie. The whole movie is great,
but like the reveal at the end is like what really makes it. That's what really, like.
Well, that and Everything Is Awesome. One of the single greatest songs in
movies. No, that song's bad. That song is great because it's bad.
It's exactly what it's supposed to be.
Because it's making fun of how pop music is today. But yeah. That still doesn't get me past my general hatred of pop music.
That's fair. That's okay. I challenge any person to watch that movie and not hum Everything Is Awesome for the next week and a half. Because
it's an earwig.
Yeah, it's impossible. Good for you using the word earwig. That was on Jeopardy the other day. And it was like, man, what old person uses the word earwig still? And it was you. It's you, Joel. That was like the $1,000 one too. It was like words people don't use anymore. And it was like, that was like the hardest one and you just used it. So
I don't think I know how many regular podcast listeners we have, but if they're paying attention, they're realizing I'm like a 55-year-old, 34-year-old.
Well, earwig, it seals the deal for me. So
like if you pay attention, that's a pretty steady thread.
See, I'm afraid I see my future in that now that I'm a parent. But,
well, you're 55-year-old in a different way. You're the 55-year-old who like hates the world already.
Yeah, I want people off my lawn. That's,
yeah,
I do. I want. I don't know what they're doing out there, so. Causing trouble.
How dare these Halloween trick or treaters come onto my lawn? Just walk on the sidewalk like a good kid and get your dang candy out of my bowl.
There's a lot more truth to that than you want to believe, but. All right, guys. Well, we've been going for a while, so we're going to let you go. But, yeah, appreciate you guys listening to the Cover 2. Yeah, we'll have another one. I mean, God, this is going to be a back-to-back Cover 2 podcast kind of thing. It'll be another one tomorrow night, or probably very early Friday morning is more likely the situation. So, like I said, that'll be the hotel room podcast where our thoughts are not very well collected. So enjoy.
We're driving a day of, because it's pretty close, which makes it even more likely that our brains will be a little scrambled.
Yeah, it's going to be like a good 14-15 hour day. So that'll be, yeah, I'm excited.
The reason you should look forward to this is because Jim usually preys on my fatigue to make me have hot takes.
Yeah, actually, I was just gonna say, like, if they win, get ready to hear about the greatest team in the NFL, and if they lose, the worst team in the NFL. So, I mean, which is, again, this is what you guys want, right? That's all Colts fans want to hear. So, now it's something to look forward to, and go check out Joel's story on. I haven't read it yet, but we talked a lot about it, so I'm excited to read it about how NFL, like the way NFL coaches and teams view the Colts defense. I think it's going to be really cool. So check that out, and check out all our coverage on IndyStar.com, and enjoy the game.